Here to give us a broader perspective is someone who spent a lot of time thinking about health outcomes in the city of Detroit. Abdul El-Sayed is the former health director for the city and is the author of a new book called Healing Politics that's out next week. Abdul El-Sayed, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've obviously never lived through something like this. Was there ever an infrastructure or a pandemic sort of plan that would have woven together these health systems? Is that something you guys had ever discussed about how people would share information given an epidemic?
So every local and state health department has an emergency preparedness unit, and they think through exactly these scenarios. The challenge, though, is that from the CDC on down, we've seen over the past several decades just generally cuts to funding for public health. And the problem is that preparedness is one of those things that you always feel prepared enough until you're actually hit by the thing you are preparing for. And the challenge is that funding for preparedness is also one of those places that suffered because, you know, you ask, well, we're prepared enough, so let's just strip away the funding.
But you're prepared until you're not.
That's right. You're prepared until you're not prepared, right? What is the famous Mike Tyson quote? Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And so public health right now is being punched in the mouth. And we're seeing a lot of this disintegrate. And part of the problem is that so much of our preparedness planning happens at the federal level. And we've seen, in effect, a missing in action federal response. The CDC has not been out front since this began and is trying to catch up. And that puts a lot of challenge on state and local health officials and health departments who sort of have to make it up as they go. And I will say that our local health officials have done a fantastic job, all things considered, with preparing in the context of a never before seen first, you know, once in a lifetime pandemic, but also without the federal leadership and resources that, you know, we should have been able to rely on.
I want to come back to policy in just a little bit with you, but first let's dive into the cases that we're seeing here in Michigan. About one third of the cases of coronavirus confirmed thus far have been in the city of Detroit, and in Wayne County proper, it's nearly half of the total cases. So what do you attribute that to?
It's a matter of course. You know, when we talk about an epidemic, epidemiologists think about three aspects. There's the virus or the pathogen, in this case, the coronavirus. But that's not even a third of the story. The other parts that we think about are the host and the environment. And if you want to understand how a disease like this affects people, you also have to look at the vulnerabilities that those people have. And we know that, you know, Wayne County and Detroit are the lowest income parts of the state. Poverty is a serious challenge. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, the city of Detroit decided to turn water on, which is something you shouldn't have to say because water should never be turned off. And the baseline level of poverty is serious. And then you look at the degree of interconnectedness between people, and Wayne County is one of the densest parts of the state. And so there's just more admixture. And so you have folks who are uniquely vulnerable to infection, admixing more than in other parts of the state. And that's the recipe for spread. And so the challenge that public health officials and public officials generally have in terms of containing a virus like this is uniquely harder in a place like Wayne County, and in particular in Detroit, because of these underlying factors. And then lastly, again, you know, part of the environment is public health preparedness. And given the lack of federal leadership and the fact that, you know, up until 2015, really, we had a massively underfunded health department, we're playing from behind. And I will say that, you know, the officials have performed admirably again under the stress. But, you know, it's hard to make up for a 45% drop in funding across the board for local and state public health when you're now hit with the hardest pandemic we've seen in over 100 years.
Do you expect to see on a national scale that there will be these disparities of who is infected and who have the worst outcomes of the disease?
My expectation is that early on, we're going to see the opposite, because our ability to ascertain who has the disease is a function of who gets tested. And, you know, as the examples of, you know, eight NBA teams getting tested before health workers on the front lines shows, that people who are rich and well-connected are more likely to get tested, and therefore they're going to look like they were hit hardest first. But what's going to happen over time is the true epidemiology of this disease is going to bear out. And like almost every disease that we know of, low-income people, marginalized people will get hit the hardest. And so I would say that early numbers are not a real indicator of the real burden of this. And, you know, just as a matter of course, course, Laura, just to do a little bit of sort of back of the envelope epidemiology for folks, on average, it takes about 5 days for symptoms to come to light. And most of the folks we're testing right now are folks who have symptoms, meaning that they were infected 5 days ago on average. And then on top of that, it takes several days for us to get the tests back and then to get them collated and reported out. And so yesterday's number, around 1,400, really reflects the state of the disease about 8 days before that. And right now, the disease has a 2.5 day doubling time, which is the amount of time it takes for the number of cases to double. And so if you think about that, right, that is about three doubling times behind, which means that 1,400 is not really an accurate number. We're really looking at 1,400 times two times two times two, which is over 10,000. And that's the challenge that we're dealing with right now, is that we're constantly playing from behind. And so, you know, it's really hard to take a pandemic like this down if you're behind at the jump. And unfortunately, given the challenges with testing, given the, you know, fundamental baseline lack of investment in public health, we've been behind from the jump.
A number of the people that we've heard about who have died in the city of Detroit have been relatively young and with no underlying health issues or issues that we don't normally consider to be fatal in adults, like asthma. What do we know about the general picture of health in the city of Detroit or the of any city, really? What are the general health picture that we're looking at?
Well, I want to speak to Detroit in particular. You know, we talked about poverty and marginalization, and those imprint themselves on people's health at baseline in ways that make them far more vulnerable to this particular disease. And, you know, the asthma hospitalization rate in Detroit, for example, is threefold the state average. We know that, you know, this disease attacks the lungs and it causes a shortness of breath very akin to the shortness of breath of asthma. So if at baseline you are short of breath because of the asthma that you suffer, when this disease hits, it's going to hit you a lot harder and has a higher likelihood of taking your life. And so, you know, it's impossible, you know, like I said, to just talk about a virus. You have to talk about the host and have to talk about the environment. And right now, Detroit is an environment that has been making people sick for a long time as a function of poverty, as a function of lack of access to basic healthcare, lack of access to healthy foods, a situation where people have their water shut off and the air that folks breathe is polluted by corporations right down the street. All of those things at baseline create a worse baseline health that then is exploited by this virus. And so, you know, the notion that this virus would be deadlier in a community like Detroit is just simply a function of the fact that that the environment makes people sick in a community like Detroit. And our focus has to be not just on stopping the pandemic, but also fortifying the most vulnerable of us. And so we've got to really be focusing on communities like Detroit that are going to get hit hardest.
Our guest right now is Abdul El-Sayed. He's the former Detroit health director and also the author of a new book titled Healing Politics, A Doctor's Journey into the Heart of Our Political Epidemic. Abdul, I've read a number of posts from my friends on social media who are Black, they're just scared, quite frankly. And, you know, everyone is scared, but there is a sense that COVID-19 is bearing down on Detroit and its residents. If you were still there heading up the health department, how do you balance both the overwhelmed hospitals and trying to work with those health systems and also the overwhelmed mental state that this could put an entire city of people in?
Yeah. You know, it's no secret that that the city has undergone, you know, a number of challenges over the past several decades. And, you know, whether it was the lead up to the Great Recession or the impact of the recession itself, or, you know, the frankly inequitable rebuilding of the city. You talk to Black Detroiters and they feel like in many circumstances they've gotten the short end of the stick, and, you know, that's a function of public policy, not just coincidence. And then they see something like this and they say, you know, not again. And so I can deeply empathize with that. What I would be thinking about if I were in the role is obviously the technical responsibility we have to slow the spread. And so it's really, really critical for folks, you know, if they're afraid, the thing that we can do more than anything else is to stay home. This disease relies on us spreading it between each other. If we can stay home and we can keep it from spreading, we're doing our part. The second part, though, is not just flattening the curve. It's also anticipating the curve. And so we've got to be able to move healthcare resources into the communities that are going to be hardest hit. I wrote an op-ed almost 2 weeks ago now arguing that we needed a a military-style hospital unit in every major metro in the United States run by the military. Because right now, our healthcare resources are not well-placed to be able to respond to this. We just don't have enough of the basic things like ventilators and personal protective equipment for providers on the front lines and the ICU beds. And so we need an alternative system.
Are you saying that the governor should be calling in the National Guard?
I do believe that we need to call in the National Guard. I think we needed to do it 2 weeks ago. You know, just the numbers that I shared with you were way behind. And so we've got a responsibility to start extending the capacity to provide care so that we can meet the influx of patients that are going to come from this. And then the third part of this is that, you know, it is a scary time. And it is really, really challenging. A lot of us heard about the news of the passing of a young man, Marlo Stoudemire, who just is one of those bright lights in Detroit. And, you know, for me, it was the first person I know personally who I care about who passed as a victim of this epidemic. And I think, you know, we've got to remember that, you know, this is real and it is affecting all of us. And at the same time, we've got a responsibility to act in this moment to protect each other and to stay home and not to pass it, realizing that we've got this moment to act. And the one act that we can all do is to prevent the spread while our public officials increase the capacity to meet the needs of care right now and make sure that we're moving real, adequate, thoughtful information out to people so that they know what's happening and where we are in the state of this pandemic.
Abdul El-Sayed, he's the former Detroit Health Director, and he's also the author of a new book titled Healing Politics, A Doctor's Journey into the Heart of Our Political Epidemic. That book is coming out next week. Abdul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.